and welcome to Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, the Chief Executive Officer for the Lupus Foundation of America, the Philadelphia Tri-State Chapter, Cindy Messerly. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thrilled to be back.
It's good to be back, and it's good to be sitting down across from each other.
Yes, it is.
With a nice 6-foot distance in between, but it feels so good. Reunited. You're here today. Saw you not that long ago, but now you've got some exciting news because, of course, the Walk to End Lupus now is returning, and we're going to talk about that, but let's get started first with the obvious question. What is the Lupus Foundation of America?
Well, first of all, what is lupus? Let's start there. Lupus is a chronic autoimmune disease of inflammation. Something goes wrong with your immune system in that your immune system thinks that your healthy organs are invaders, and it starts to attack them. And ultimately what happens is it causes inflammation and therefore causes damage, and sometimes can be irreparable damage and long-term and, you know, organ failure damage. It can be that severe. So it is chronic. There's no known cure, and there's limited treatments.
And so then the foundation...
Yes. So our goal, our mission is to improve the quality of life for all those affected by lupus. We do that through programs of education, research, support, and advocacy. We're one of 13 chapters across the country, and we're an affiliate of our national office in Washington, D.C.
How have you been handling the COVID-19 crisis? Is that a fair question to ask? How does somebody with lupus react with this?
Well, it's been an interesting time. Well, for all of us, it's been an interesting mm-hmm. time. No matter where you are and what you do, it's been, as most people say, craziness, right? But I think that for earlier in the spring, I would say March and April, you may remember when hydroxychloroquine was a possible treatment for COVID. Well, that also happens to be the main drug and a cornerstone drug for people with lupus. It's often the first drug that they've go on, and many people are on it for 20 plus years and stay on it. They take it every single day of their lives, and that helps them to just get through the day. It doesn't eliminate all their symptoms, but it certainly does manage for many to a certain extent. And that went into a shortage situation. So the first part of the lockdown and quarantine for people with lupus was really challenging if you had been on hydroxychloroquine, that's for sure. Fortunately, we're out of that. Living with lupus is somewhat of a isolating disease anyway. When you have any type of autoimmune disease, you want to make sure that you're removed from germs, that you're keeping yourself safe, you wash your hands, you use hand sanitizer. So people living with lupus often have that type of routine on a regular basis. Just by nature of their symptoms, it can keep them at home a little bit more as well.
Has there been any research using the population, though, especially when the rumors of the purported benefits of the drug? Did they look at the community and say, oh, gosh, here we've got this nice sample of people who have been on this drug for many years?
They have, and there was a pretty quick research project that was started in collaboration with several autoimmune and lupus organizations in which to capture, because hydroxychloroquine is also treatment for rheumatoid arthritis. So capturing anybody who was on Plaquenil and their rates of getting COVID. And the bottom line is it didn't prevent people from getting COVID. It didn't lessen the symptoms or any of that kind of effect. People with lupus and that were on Plaquenil were still getting COVID, just like any other form of the population. So they did ultimately deem it as that it wasn't an appropriate treatment. And so our supplies have gone back to normal. But just even with living with any type of autoimmune disease, and specifically lupus in our case, people do tend to isolate. They tend to be withdrawn when we do this during flu season, right? So it hasn't changed. In fact, in talking, my son's girlfriend happens to have lupus as well, and she's like, I've never felt better, right? She's home. She's rested. She's isolated. She's not around germs. She was in the daycare industry. She's not doing that anymore, right? So different things have changed for her, and certainly she feels great. So that's not everybody's case.
Now, you mentioned rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. Are they related? What are some of the terms or the names that lupus might be actually known as, or what are some of the diseases that are similar to lupus? Is it
Interesting, because lupus is one of the challenges of lupus is diagnosing lupus.
I think that's where I was headed, actually.
That is very hard to diagnose. And on average, it can take 6 to 8 years to actually come up with an actual diagnosis, a true diagnosis. For reasons of being misdiagnosed, maybe having symptoms that mimic something else, because the symptoms so often mimic other diseases, extreme fatigue, low-grade fever, hair loss, skin rash, photosensitivity, and joint pain. So any one of those or any combination of those, it's often misdiagnosed, or somebody looks at Lyme disease is often the first thing that they go to. But it also, depending if you have any type of organ involvement, and specific organ involvement such as heart or kidney, you may have gone to a nephrologist, you may have gone to a cardiologist and been treated for that particular ailment. And if the, all of the pieces of the puzzle weren't put together, the lupus diagnosis was probably missed. It also is that lupus doesn't have one individual test to test. There's no one blood test for lupus. There's no one factor that says, you have this, so you have lupus. That it doesn't work that way. It's a series of things. It's a series of blood tests. They do an antibody, anti-nuclear antibody test. If that's positive, it puts them in the right direction to say, okay, now we need to look at some other things, and they'll go deeper into the blood work for that. They'll also look at lifestyle, life concerns, symptoms, and generally what your past history has been. Family history plays a role. Many people with lupus have extended family members that have lupus as well. So they look at all of those things to be diagnosed. So often people with an autoimmune disease will have multiple autoimmune diseases. So we have one constituent who has 7 different autoimmune diseases, lupus, MS, and 5 others. So it's not like they're little ones either. They are some significant diseases that are happening, you know, together.
So there's no one particular, well, there's no test, you said that, but there's no one identifying thing like, I'm trying to think of an example here, I can't, yes. where that one symptom appears and the light bulb goes off to somebody in the medical industry, you know, the healthcare industry, and they go, oh, it's lupus. There is no one unifying symptom?
There really isn't. I think the most common thing that you hear amongst people with lupus is the fatigue and the joint pain. There are umpteen number of different, you know, 10, 12 different symptoms that you may look at. And if you have 3 or 4 of those, that could really point to a lupus diagnosis. But it is often considered a fingerprint disease because it is so unique to each individual that has it. You and I could be both sitting here with lupus. We could be on different treatment protocols. We could have different symptoms. We could have different outcomes. And by the way, that might change tomorrow because my body has decided to go into a flare. It's a disease of flares and remissions. So one day I'm feeling great and I'm going, you know, about my daily life the way that I typically feel. And the next day I wake up and boom, I'm down for the count and I'm in an extreme flare, which means my body's in overdrive. My internal immune system is really fighting internally against my healthy organs.
And this affects anybody, any age group, any ethnicity, et cetera?
So anybody can be at risk. However, those primarily at risk are women. 90% of those affected are women. Between the ages of 15 and 44 is a typical diagnosis. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen on the extreme ends. And it's women of color. You're 2 to 3 times more likely to be a woman of color as opposed to a Caucasian woman. And we simply don't know why. There's a lot of research happening around that. There isn't a gene necessarily that has been identified to say you have this gene, it's genetic, and it's going to happen within your family. They do believe that there are a couple of different factors that factor into a diagnosis, environmental factors. So if you're in a stressful situation, you may have lupus for a long time, but whatever brings it out to a point where you're having such a significant flare that it finally gets diagnosed. It could be a stressful event, an environmental event. It could be a physical change. It could be an infection that you got. It could be any number of things that bring out the lupus in you, so to speak, right, for lack of a better word. And that allows it to be finally be diagnosed. Many people will say, I've had this all my life. I've had low-grade fevers. I had joint pain. I had injuries as a kid. I had this as a kid. I was always sick. I was always missing school. And it simply went undiagnosed into their 20s or 30s or even 40s.
So there might be something that genetic that might be leading to this, and then that one factor will kick it into something identifiable enough to be diagnosed.
Right, and we haven't identified what that genetic factor is. So there's a lot of research happening around who gets lupus, what causes it, because the more we know about what causes it, the better that we can identify a cure or better treatments at this point. There are limited treatments available. Fortunately, well, in the last 50 years, there has only been one drug that's been specifically identified and approved by the FDA for lupus. Fortunately, this past December, we had two exciting announcements through research that has happened globally, that two new drugs are coming out that are specifically targeted for people with lupus. One is lupus nephritis, which involves your kidneys when you have kidney involvement with lupus, and the other is for lupus in general. So we're super excited that in 50 years we've only had one, but now in 60 years we'll have potentially three as it comes to market in 2021.
Talk a little bit about research, because this is a huge part of what you do. And one, you advocate for money at the federal level and you get it dedicated towards this, but you fundraise for research as well. And so you have projects going on all over the place.
We really do. It is incredible, the scope of research. And you can certainly log on to lupustristates.org and check out the details of the research. But we do, we're really looking at cause, care, and control. So what causes lupus? How does somebody live a better quality of life through lupus? So and how do we identify better treatments, right? Those are the main focus of what we're looking for in research. And right now there's some exciting research happening with mesenchymal stem cells. That is super exciting. The results are, that's in a phase two right now. And so the results are fairly positive. Unfortunately, things have slowed down a bit through COVID. Some trials have had to be put on hold. Continuing treatment, I think new enrollment will start to hopefully pick up again soon. And new enrollment was halted for a bit. But in light of the two announcements that we've had coming out, we know that the research is continuing. The challenge of research with lupus is identifying, because it is such a fingerprint disease, it is so unique to different people, that getting people to participate in clinical trials has been a challenge. And also understanding who is participating in clinical trials versus who is affected. So we're realizing that the majority of people affected are women of color, but are they duly represented in clinical trials? So that's actually a big effort that we do, as well as trying to educate people on understanding the value of clinical trials and participating in them, but also the patients to know whether you qualify, because not everyone will qualify for every trial. They're so unique in some fashions, and everybody's treatment protocol is so different. So patience and persistence are important. You can also see all of the clinical trials that are happening on our website, or you can go to clinicaltrial.gov, and you'll see anything, just research under lupus. And that's a great resource. But we have amazing researchers right here in Philadelphia. We have some really critical projects going on here at CHOP. One is identifying a potential urine test for kidney involvement for kids, so that, to know whether you're truly in a flare, you don't want to have a biopsy every time. So that's super exciting, some things that are happening. We also fund some local research here out of the Philadelphia Tri-State Chapter. Nationally, we do millions of dollars every year. However, locally here, we're fortunate to be able to fund some young investigators. So annually, we take applications for local research that's happening right here in our Philadelphia Tri-State region. And we're thrilled. This year, we supported three different projects of varying. And they're young investigators. The key for lupus research is to really engage people at an early start and keep the pipeline filled, simply because there's not the expanse of research. When you look at something like cancer or even potentially Alzheimer's or something to that effect, there's potentially a lot more research going on as opposed to lupus. So we like to get them young.
And in getting them young, okay, so yeah. But yet they're not diagnosed young. So I can understand why this urine test, well, would that actually diagnose lupus, or would that be for a kid who's already got it and you're just trying to decide what kind of problem
they're
having? Exactly.
Right now that would be for diagnosing the kidney involvement. So it's looking for some certain proteins and things like that in the urine that would identify a kidney disease being escalated or in a flare where it would need greater treatment that you may not have been able to identify as early on without a biopsy.
I can't even imagine trying to create a cohort for research if you've got so many different symptoms. And you talked about flares. So you could have a period of general pleasant health and then be just debilitated.
You could. You really could. And it, and lupus is something that ranges from very moderate to very extreme. So it can, again, you and I could both be sitting here and your body could be devastated with lupus. And I have the same diagnosis and I'm doing okay, or vice versa. And tomorrow it might change. So it really runs the gamut of extremity between person to person, as well as... you know, your everyday, you have a little bit of a new norm. There's an expression in lupus that a comparison to spoons, that a normal healthy person may wake up in the morning with 10 spoons, right? That's your energy level. You go throughout the day, you get dressed, you go to work, you do your exercise, you do whatever you got to do, and you slowly deplete those spoons. People with lupus may start out with 6 or 7 spoons in the day. Like, the fatigue is so extreme that you start out your day exhausted. And that's often how it's diagnosed, is that the fatigue is so extreme you can't even get out of bed. I heard someone recently compare it to Benadryl tired.
Ooh.
Yes. Trying to function through the day while you're on Benadryl. That's the type of fatigue that some people experience. And again, it varies. It varies from person to person on what they're able to do. And it's really often about lifestyle change, about how do you accommodate and how do you acclimate to your new normal, right? Is it scheduling in time? If you're going to be out and about, then you need some downtime. Rescheduling yourself so that you're not so super busy, so that you're super exhausted all the time.
We're going to pursue that when we get back into discussion. But first, I got to say that this is Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we're talking to Cindy Meserle. She is the Chief Executive Officer for the Lupus Foundation of America, Philadelphia Tri-State Chapter. If you would like more information, go to lupustristate.org. Anywhere you are, you can always go to lupus.org, FYI. But here in the Delaware Valley, lupustristate.org. And for what we're about to delve into, the walks coming up, just do /walks and you'll find out more information about what's happening in your neck of the woods. You just alluded to exercise and just, you know, you living the day, etc. Is living with lupus one of accommodation or one of, you mentioned exercise, are there any day-to-day treatments or activities, etc.? Jump in there.
It is. It's really different. And that's the unique thing, is it's really different for every single person. There's no lupus diet. There's no lupus exercise plan. There's nothing specific for the general lupus population that we can really pinpoint to. It is really about what works for you. And a lot of people living with lupus experiment with that to figure out what does work best for them. I think if you compared it to exercise and some type of movement is typically healthy for anybody to whatever level they can manage it. We all know that if you've worked out or you have joint pain, the longer you sit, the longer you stay immobile, the stiffer you are when you get moving. So for some people, yes, it's really important to keep running, keep moving, do whatever it was that the activity that they love to do beforehand, or modify that in some way, shape, or form. So if you were a runner before and maybe running just is really hard on your joints right now, maybe they've gone back to walking, but to still keep some kind of movement going. So to answer, there's nothing specific, but living, some people will look at gluten-free diets and dairy-free diets. And again, it's what their system reacts better to. So for some people, gluten's a no-no. For some people, it doesn't bother them at all. So it really is an individual effort we always recommend, you know, sometimes you just have to try different things to see what works, much as if you were trying to figure out if you were gluten intolerant or had a dairy, intolerance. So remove it, see if you feel better. If you feel better, maybe you want to go with it. If not, you know, there's certainly a lot of different avenues, low inflammation diets, different things like that you might want to look at to see what foods and types of movement affect you.
So we've already talked about research, but it's the programming that you offer for someone who has lupus or for their loved ones, et cetera, and living with lupus is a huge part of what you are, what you're out there and doing, and you want to quickly go over some of the programming that you offer, and then let's get into paying the bills for all of that. So I'm diagnosed, or I suspect I have lupus, and I go to the website. What's out there for me and my peers?
There's fortunately, and now that we've all gone virtual, the access to programming is really easy for a lot of people living with lupus. If you have access on your smartphone or your computer, most of our programs are available that way these days. We've done that turn. We've gone to all virtual. Fortunately for the lupus community, actually, the response has been quite favorable. because you can attend whether you're having a bad lupus day or the weather is bad or it's too hot or too sunny, because people with lupus are often have photosensitivity to the sun and can't be out in the heat and the sun. So this virtual world has actually benefited and expanded our programming, which has been terrific. But so we offer various programs. For example, one's called, we call it SLESH, SLE, is the most common form of lupus, and that is systemic lupus erythematosus. And we offer a self-help course called SLESH, which is SLE, self-help. And that is a five-week course that's offered to anyone living with lupus. There's no charge for that. And we meet weekly for 5 weeks. And now we're doing that virtually. So, in fact, we have one course starting in September. But you can check out our website for any future dates that are coming up. We also offer programs that are called Living Well with Lupus Seminars, which are offered regionally. They were intended to be in-person programs regionally in South Jersey and Philadelphia and Delaware and Central Pennsylvania. We've been able to take all of those virtual and feature the local regional physicians and experts in that area, which has been great. It also opens up a lot more programming because people can join by Zoom or by GoToMeeting, whatever platform we're using. They can join virtually and participate and certainly learn a lot more. So our goal is to provide a greater understanding of your disease and of lupus so that you can live that better quality of life. So learn how to manage it better, whether that means meeting with peers through a support group and having that peer-to-peer support, or hearing from a rheumatologist or a physiologist or a nutritionist about some recommendations on what to do or how to best manage your doctor's appointment. Often people with lupus can be living with and managing upwards 6 to 8 different physicians and specialists. So think about that every time you go to the doctor every 2-3 months. You know, your cardiologist, your nephrologist, your dermatologist, your rheumatologist, which is who manages your lupus, your primary care, right? So you've got all of these various physicians to manage. So it can be a challenge for sure.
Is managing the healthcare professionals part of this as well, training them or educating them that, hey, if you're seeing this particular person and they mention that they're also seeing a cardiologist or that they are meeting with a nephrologist, et cetera, and putting it together themselves, being more aware of this?
We do. We do try to partner with various organizations and offer various programming. So whether it's offering, we have some CME credits available on our website for physicians. To working with an organization right now to connect with primary care physicians and offer some lupus education for primary care physicians to better be able to maybe sooner diagnose it and identify some things quicker. So yes, we love to partner with our medical community and share, whether it's materials, maybe we just have the educational materials that they want to distribute to their patients to make their job a little bit easier. But we are very fortunate to have an amazing rheumatology community right here in this region that we have some terrific partnerships with across the board.
And, of course, a huge community is part of this, and families obviously are involved because they are, too, are dealing with the disease. And so you've got this event, and it's the Walk to End Lupus Now, and this year it's going virtual, mm-hmm. which I'm going to guess that everybody really loves, too. And you want to talk about that? Talk about the local walks and talk about the regional and just talk about all of them.
Definitely. So we were very fortunate that we are able to take all these walks to virtual, that we didn't cancel anything. We actually haven't had to cancel any event this year. So we're grateful for that. Three of our spring walks, we call them our spring walks, were postponed to the fall. And then, of course, everything went virtual. And on 10-10-20 and October 10th, 2020, will be the national celebration of the Walk to End Lupus Now. And we're super excited. So what does that look like? We have 4 walks in our region: Philadelphia, Central Pennsylvania, South Jersey, and Delaware. So all 4 of those walks virtually will take place and have it their own individual celebration on 10-10. And you can find out more and register for walks. There's no fee to register. It's at lupustristate.org/walks. And so there's no fee to register, but we would love for you to try and engage and maybe fundraise. There are lots of incentives for T-shirts to sweatshirts to team spirit boxes, all kinds of fun stuff for reaching different levels of fundraising. But what we've really tried to do is take that, what we're missing of the in-person community, of being live and in-person, because that's our first. We love our lupus community to get together, and we will again when it's safe to do so, and it's smart to bring our lupus community together. But for now, we'll do this virtually. We'll We have a live program that'll happen on 1010 for each of those individual walks. So at 9 a.m. on 1010, the Central PA celebration will happen. At 10 o'clock, South Jersey, 11 o'clock, Delaware, and at noon, the Philadelphia. And then at 1 o'clock, there's going to be a national celebration that will celebrate 70,000-plus walkers across the country in 60 cities, plus having walks all around the world, all around the country, celebrating at 1 o'clock on 1010. So we're super excited to not just have the local presence and have that local celebration, but also on a national level and looking across the country to see what will happen.
How will this take place this year? Are you just going to walk in place or walk over the course of a day, or is there any walking at all involved
this
year?
So that's the beauty of a virtual walk, is you can walk anywhere, anytime, any way that you want. We actually have a little slogan on our website now as part of the logo that says, walk your way. It's walk to End Lupus Now, walk your way. So you can walk. You can walk. You can run. You can walk in place. You can walk around your dining room. You can walk around your front yard. You can walk around the block. And you can do it whenever it works for you. So if 1010 is not a day that works for you, then walk on 1009. Walk on, 930. We really encourage people just to be together as a family unit, a small family unit, or a team. We have lots of teams that are registered. And so if you can safely be together as a team and walk in a park, we are, encouraging social distancing and wearing your mask and doing whatever is appropriate for your family, whether you've been together, but to participate with what works for you. Then we want to see all the pictures. We want to see the videos. We want people to celebrate back with us. And we're using a platform and a way to be able to both live stream and share videos and pictures and things like that. So we have some exciting things that are happening when you are when a team captain happens to raise $1,000. We call them a trailblazer, and since we can't be there to celebrate in person, we're sending them each trailblazer team captain, when they reach that level, a team spirit box. So it's going to be filled with noisemakers and sidewalk chalk and balloons and just some fun things to help them make their own walk celebration truly a celebration in their neighborhood or their home.
So it is a walk. You're going to register, you're going to put together a team, you're going to fundraise, and then on the 10th, you don't have to get up super early and hope for good weather. It's
right.
Wherever you may be, and you're going to go to the website and watch as each hour as another group celebrates, and at 1 o'clock, you're all together.
That's it. That's exactly it. So you can join us for 30 minutes for one and come back at one, or you can join all four. You've got the flexibility to do what you need to do. And like you said, you can sit there with a cup of coffee in your hand, a cup of tea, and enjoy the show, whether you walk or not. And you can walk after. You can walk before. So we're loving. People are super excited. They're excited that we're still able to hold something and participate as a group. Because clearly our lupus community, as are many others, still concerned about our COVID-19 and, the spread of it. So who knows where we'll be at that point, but we know that we'll still be able to hold this event, which we're excited.
So if you see someone walking around the block on 1010, throw some money at them.
That's right.
And say thank you for walking to support lupus research and programming.
Exactly, exactly. With the purple balloons and streamers and whatever else they got on them and their purple gear, they'll be ready to go.
And registration is open now.
Registration is open now and will remain open through 1010, and you continue to fundraise now through 1010 and after.
No, or even better.
Yep.
So, and for this one, we just go to lupustristate.org/walks, and all the information, registration will be there. And is that the site for 1010 to join all of the festivities?
There will be a separate link for that, but we'll share that on the website and to all people who are registered. You'll get that. You'll get a separate link for that.
Okay. So again, go to lupustristate.org/walks to find out how you can participate in the Walk to End Lupus Now this year, October 10th, and it will be all that morning with the big grand finale of everyone together at 1 p.m. virtually. So, for more information about anything that we talked about, and for far more information about what we didn't get to today, wherever you may be, lupus.org is the place to go. And for the tri-state area, for the Philadelphia tri-state chapter, go to lupustristate.org. lupus.org. And my guest today, Cindy Meserly, returning. She is the Chief Executive Officer for that Philadelphia Tri-State Chapter for the Lupus Foundation of America. And thanks for coming in.
Oh, Laura, thank you for having us. We're so grateful to have you, to spread the word and share our mission. So thank you.
Well, good luck on 10-10. Remember, 10-10, the walk to end lupus now. Go to lupustristate.org/walks. And Cindy, thanks again. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Philadelphia Focus.